You were appointed one of 14 new regional business directors at Johnson & Johnson, and you were responsible for $96 million in budget. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I want to know.
Most sales guys are bragging their butts off about...
He's like leaving out these key details here that are super important. And so that's amazing. And I want to know, how'd you do it?
Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Sell or Die. My name is Jeffrey Gittimer. I'm the author of The Little Red Book of Selling, and...
I'm Jen Gluckow, founder and CEO of Sales in a New York Minute.
And we're going to help you make more sales. We're going to help you think a little bit clearer. We're going to help you buy Christmas gifts at retail. Nothing is impossible here at Sell or Die.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have a great show today. I'm real excited.
You know, our guest was a teacher. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether you've ever hired teachers before. Oh, wait, you did hire teachers.
I did. But before we get into that, Jeffrey, I want to talk about a contest you're running right now, because this is really, really freaking cool. And we're getting some great feedback on this contest. Okay, so if you want to win an all expense paid trip to Charlotte, North Carolina, to spend the day getting coached by Jeffrey, which is a $35,000 value, you'll get to spend time in the studio, tour his library, see behind the scenes of the Sell or Die podcast. We may even invite you to be a guest on our show.
Ooh.
You'll get writing trips, actionable sales advice, whatever you want to learn from Jeffrey that day, he will help you. But here are the rules of the contest. What you need to do is you need to record a video detailing why and how your yes attitude has changed your life. Jeffrey,
it's from the book, The Little Gold Book of Yes Attitude, and we don't need it to be a forever video, just a minute or so, about what happened to you, what was the impact, and how did it help you?
Exactly. So after you record the video, upload that video to YouTube and title it, Jeffrey Gittimer Gave Me a Yes Attitude. Then share it all over social. Just share it, share it, share it. Use the hashtag Yes Attitude, hashtag Gittimer, tag Jeffrey Gittimer wherever you're sharing it. And the more times and platforms you share it on, the more potential you have to win. Now, there's one caveat to this. By posting these videos, you are allowing us to use these videos in promotional materials going forward.
Yeah, especially if they're good. So give it
but
your best shot.
That's pretty cool. I mean,
give it your best shot. You can make it a selfie video. You turn your iPhone on yourself, or get both your friends or one of your friends to come over and shoot the video of you. And just talk about yes attitude. Talk about how it impacted you, and you may win.
Yep.
They'll probably get a bunch of entries.
I can't wait to see meet the winner.
Yeah, me too.
I'm really excited about this, because they're going to have a great attitude when they show up. It's going to be fun to hang out for the day. So, Jeffrey, you asked me before if I had ever hired teachers because, well,
I was just trying to make small talk, Jen.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No.
Oh, okay. You don't want the answer then?
Nah.
Okay.
Never mind.
Now what?
There's one thing that I have found in my career, and just talking about this guy who we're going to be interviewing, the teacher and, interestingly, the athlete, and more interestingly, the soldier, the military person, they have the same set of tools that make hiring them ideal. And I was wondering if you had, what was the reason you were hiring teachers?
Well,
because you were hiring them as salespeople, correct?
Yeah, it's funny. I was pulling teachers out of the classroom, teachers who were, you know, tired of teaching, but wanting more. And I think a lot of times teachers work their butts off. And unfortunately, our society doesn't pay them on the right scale. It doesn't pay them in a commensurate way to what they're doing and the work that they're achieving. I mean, we're trusting our kids with them, right?
Yep.
And they're making these amazing efforts and amazing, and they're providing amazing results.
Sacrifices.
Oh yeah.
They're definitely, you know, they're winning one for the Gipper, but they're doing it in a way that, you know, I know my daughter has these teachers in, at her school, and they're amazing people. And I know they're not making any money. I know they're not being, and they have to stay after school and do the basketball team and, you know, all the other stuff.
Yeah, they do a lot of stuff, right. So what I had found was that teachers make amazing salespeople because they know how to transfer a message in a way that their audience, whoever their audience is, whether it's little kids or, you know, different adults in different industries, whatever, they know how to transfer their message in a compelling way. They know how to get their point across and essentially sell their idea to others. And they're hard workers and they're passionate and they come from a place of education rather than sales. So they're just trying to help.
Yeah.
And what I have found is they make great salespeople.
Well, there's a couple of other disciplines that I'd like to throw at you.
Go for it.
The athlete knows how to play the game.
Mm-hmm. Knows how to be on a team.
And plays with the team well. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's barbs from time to time, but it's competitive. They want to win. And they're coachable. The military guy follows the rules. He or she is in great shape, mentally and physically. They're willing to risk. They're willing to go on a 5-mile hike or a 25-mile hike.
Yep.
So all of these people have this discipline about them that allows them to be successful at what they do. And it's exactly the same in sales. You have to have the discipline to succeed in sales. You just can't walk in, make a sale, and go home.
Okay, so let's talk about this for a second, Jeffrey. We have listeners who are really good salespeople, but they've never been athletes or teachers.
Right. Or soldiers.
Or soldiers or whatever. And so what are those characteristics? Let's talk about them that they possess that make them so great.
Well, first of all, they have to be willing to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, they have to be willing to learn the game.
Mm-hmm.
Third of all, they have to be willing to educate themselves and be self-disciplined so that the coach isn't going to come over or your boss isn't going to come over and go, okay, Bob, come on, you can get up at 7:30.
Yeah, let's get to practice.
Right. So there have to be some degree of self-starting.
Yep, self-starting. Great listeners.
Right. They have to be persistent. They can't take the first no. They're going to push through until the job gets done. They're going to make some sacrifices along the way. But the key is they have to be coachable.
Yep.
They have to have somebody who's either their coach or their mentor to be able to help them see a new way, better way, smarter way, and be disciplined if they fall out of line.
I'm going to add something to that.
Okay.
They have to love to serve.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with
that. That's critical.
Any athlete who's great, any soldier especially, they're serving and they're putting their life on the line.
Yep.
I have nothing but respect for that. But the teacher is the key. The teacher can influence for years and years and have the impact of what they did when they were in the third grade or the 13th grade or whatever the grade they were in. And you think about that teacher all the time. I think one of the great things, one of my friends played football and he goes to visit his coach.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's been 20 years since he's played football. And the coach had so much impact on him that he goes
two decades later. It's amazing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be cool if it's like, this person sold me something 20 years ago and 2 decades later, I still have coffee with them?
Oh, sure.
Because
I love that.
Because they built that same kind of relationship.
So anyway, let's talk about this guy, Mark Green.
All right. Well, so our guest this week is Mark Green. He's a sales and leadership expert who has worked with major companies like Walmart, Exxon, Visa, and Johnson & Johnson to exceed sales goals. Oh, just, a couple. He's worked with them to exceed sales goals and increase revenue. Mark spent the first part of his career as a teacher and sports coach, leading the United States Junior Olympic basketball to a gold medal in the World Games in Belgium. That's freaking cool.
Here, here. Come on, here, here.
Let's take a listen.
I want to begin our talk with Mark. I'm pretty excited about this because it represents a deviation from what you would normally consider marketing, like the brand of the company and some big ad in a paper or on a radio or on television or online someplace, and you're trying to get you know, you're pushing the brand, whether it's a candy bar or an automobile or a book or whatever it is. And Mark has gotten down to a grassroots level. I'd like to talk about a big picture of that, first of all, and then go back and talk a little bit about your history, if that's okay. So what do you do, bub? What's your gig down there in Florida where it's nice and sunny today?
Yeah. Well, I help professionals run faster and jump higher, really. I help them in terms of taking what are traditional corporate brand messages and putting it into a simplistic form so that they can relate to the buyer with authenticity. You know, obviously I've learned from the Little Red Book and from many of those experts that I'm watching here that if you don't have a story and you let the buyer, if you allow them to wear the cape, be the hero instead of yourself, you're going to get exponential results that are very positive. So that's what I try. I'm looking for helping them to adapt to new ways of thinking in their selling.
So basically you're taking the I and the we and turning it into a you and the them.
That's right. Exactly.
That's cool. I want to back up for a second because you actually started your career as an educator. What made you want to teach?
You know, I grew up in Central Kentucky on a tobacco farm near a bourbon distillery. Smoking and drinking is what we were accustomed to there. And
that's two of the four food groups in Lexington, isn't it?
And athletics and education was my way out of the tobacco fields.
Got you.
Perseverance and then watching mash being made and moonshine coming out of the stills, it had to age before you had any kind of quality. So I persevered and said, I would love to be part of something that is involved in giving back because I had a lot of people helping me along the way. So I decided to teach and coach as a result of getting one athletic scholarship to a small school, Transylvania University. And our president, it wasn't Dracula, by the way. But the thought that my college coach was so giving and gave me that opportunity, I wanted to give back. And so I was going to wipe out ignorance across the nation. And I began teaching. I was a coach. I was a junior Olympic coach and even a high school principal. And I found myself in all of those situations selling. I sold legislators. I sold the National Education Association. I was selling kids on success, et cetera, et cetera. And so, unfortunately, financially, that was very disheartening. And I didn't stay in that. But almost 10 years to that profession and gained a tremendous amount from it.
Wow. And so how did you decide, okay, I'm doing this, I'm selling a little bit in my job every day. Let me make that full transition into sales. How did you make that jump?
I had a former teammate that was a Johnson & Johnson salesperson, and he was leaving. And he said, I'll tell you what, I will recommend you if you will leave. So it took me about 10 minutes to decide to do
10 minutes. That's a long time.
Took his spot and began the quest. And I moved up that corporate ladder with all those positions that a lot of people claim. But I ended up doing a lot of teaching others how to sell.
And so when you got to a point where you felt you were more competent than your peers, did you reach that point? Like, I'm better than most of the people that I work with?
You know, I didn't at first because I had my head down and I realized that when I started selling, I had very little sales training, but I knew how to treat people. And I knew how to utilize in the state of Kentucky, the sport of University of Kentucky basketball as a leverage to get into a lot of these places. Mm-hmm. And I became number one in the nation and selling different pharmaceutical products. As a result, I then realized when I got to be recognized that, yeah, there were a lot of people asking me questions. So I was better.
And when you look at it from the standpoint of recognizing that you were better, what were your opportunities at that point? What did you, you know, how did you decide, hey, this is the direction I'm going to take, or, hey, this is what I want to try to do. This is my next goal because I don't want to stay as a salesperson. I want to evolve past that.
Yeah. And so there was a career pathway that Johnson & Johnson offered, which my next position was a district manager. And I took the same concepts, forming a team, teaching them what I had learned, but also new adaptations. And we were number one in the nation after 3 years there. Went on up the ladder and became a regional business director, taking over the Pittsburgh, Indianapolis, Columbus, and Cincinnati area. We were number one 3 years in a row. I had the president of the company fly to Cincinnati, where I was living at the time, and said, we got to have somebody to teach others what you're doing. And so I went into New Jersey, into Raritan, and began the process of developing curriculum and reaching out to the field. So it was a once I understood the career pathway, I wanted to be the best of the best and teach others because I enjoy helping others.
Okay. So, and by the way, I've been to that campus. It's a beautiful campus.
Yes. Thank you.
Tell me where you are. You know, you, okay. So now you have this career at Johnson & Johnson. You're the king of sales there, but you eventually left and went to Florida, correct?
Well, after I've lived in Florida for about 5 years. After I left J&J, I started a company called Strategic Pathways, which is the one I have right now. And that company grew into helping pharmaceutical companies launch their products by me and a staff of people that I'd hired, train them on how to get the product positioned and sold faster so that they could receive better results quicker for pharmaceutical companies. Companies like Pfizer and Merck and Novartis and Amgen and all those were the companies that we were working with. And I grew that company till about 15 million over a 3-year period just by doing what I had learned in business development at J&J. I didn't even really know exactly what I was doing except just gaining business. And when I had people that had worked for me and I had to meet payroll, I learned a lot.
Yeah.
The pressure of payroll is like none other.
Became less fun.
But I want to ask a very strategic question. Over the last several years, pharmaceutical companies have systematically laid off or eliminated salespeople from their go-round because they found they could go directly to a doctor. They didn't have to buy them a ballgame ticket. The government outlaws a ballgame ticket anyway. And,
right.
And they could convince the doctor either by email or by blog or by video that their drug was as good as anybody else's drug, and the doctor would prescribe it and they could eliminate the salesperson. And
yes.
You know that they've hundreds of sales reps in the pharmaceutical industry have bit the dust.
Yes, you're absolutely correct.
So why did that happen?
Well, that happened because I think that the messaging was way off and buyers, the doctor, didn't need them anymore. They could get their information from various sources. And so what I found, though, Jeffrey, was that companies were getting themselves into trouble because then they deviated from the FDA regulations and they got into compliance problems. So I have shifted my business into helping those companies that have compliance problems get them back on track.
Wow.
And different ways of selling and messaging rather than going in and ramming product down their throat and not giving them any value or insight.
I have found in my experience, and I trained a lot of sales teams for a lot of pharmaceutical companies, many of the ones you named, I found the salespeople to be wholly inept. Their whole job was to get to see the doctor for 5 minutes, and they couldn't even do that. They couldn't get past the nurses at the front gate.
Yes. Very frustrating. And it is why I have expanded and expanded my business in 2011 into the informational technology world and helping B2B companies. I still help pharmaceutical companies, but my emphasis now is more on the IT world.
This is important because you're sort of humble and you didn't say that, you know, you were appointed one of 14 new regional business directors at Johnson & Johnson and you were responsible for $96 million in budget. And that in all 3 years of your being there, your region was number one of 14 earning top honors for performance and development. So that's amazing.
Yeah.
I want to know.
Most sales guys are bragging their butts off about.
He's like leaving out these key details here that are super important. And so that's amazing. And I want to know, how'd you do it?
Well, first of all, I was just doing my job. And
what about those other 13 people? Weren't they doing their job?
Yeah.
You were number one. So what were you doing differently?
You know, what I was doing differently is taking the approach, the same approach that I had when I was starting out in education. You have to treat people accordingly. The platinum rule, treat them as they want to be treated. I got to know them. I got to know what was important to them. And they were my customer. So I had to sell them on the fact that for us to be number one, I had to have a vision. And that vision was that they needed to do their job every day and win every day. And we came up with a win-win strategy. And the acronym WIN was what's important now. Mm-hmm. And the second part of that WIN was what is next, and not worry about what happened last week or 2 months ago, or that you weren't able to accomplish what you needed to do, but that winning the gold medal for our region was the most important thing. I gave them all the credit and I got to go to the trips.
Hold on though. Let's drill this down just a little bit. The sales guy in that pharmaceutical world had a milk run. He would see the same doctors all the time, the same nurses all the time, and they either got to know them or they go, oh, here's Bobby dumbass coming in and trying to be friendly to us and giving us a breath mint or something, and try to get in the back to see the doctor. I walked into a doctor's office. I have had throat conditions in my life. I've had two throat operations. And my doctor here in Charlotte, I'm sitting in the room, and a kid walks in.
The waiting room.
No, I'm in the
patient room?
Yeah, the patient room, waiting for the doctor to come in and stick a thing down my throat.
Ugh, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
And a kid comes in, and he takes open his bag, and he puts a bunch of drugs inside of a drawer, and then he shuts the drawer and he spins around to leave. And I said, hey, are you counting this as a sales call? And the kid literally froze. And he goes, well, yeah. I said, oh, are you going to get to see the doctor? And he said, no, the doctor's busy. And I said, well, he's going to be in here in about 5 minutes. Why don't you just wait and you can talk to him? I don't care. And he left.
So that happens in pharmaceutical. It happened in my industry.
Well, he left because he had nothing of value to say.
He was embarrassed.
And that's why they're no longer there.
Okay. But that happens in every industry. In pharmaceutical, they do it. They just drop off samples. In other industries, they drop off brochures as part of their cold calling. How did you handle that? What did you have your reps do? Because obviously they were doing something different.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we had to change the measurement. I wasn't interested in how many calls they made that day or that week. I didn't care. I told them if they could make one call and achieve sales forecast, I'm happy. So I'm not going to pressure you on that. I also want to know what insight and value you're bringing in there. We all know that managed care has been around forever. If they didn't have something to say about here's how your patients can get the medication, and that here's a patient that you probably are seeing daily, and here's how our medication is going to help them, and here's how they can get it, and here are the costs. And rather than to just drop off samples and get a signature. Now, you know, there were different ways to get that done because there were call continuums that could be accessed. You know, talking to the charge nurse, talking to the assistant, talking to the nurse practitioner. You had to have a total customer focus. And so the techniques that we brought in were about getting underneath the iceberg, finding out something that was of value that you could use the next time you were in there and keep it going.
I challenge the sales reps that they should sit with the doctor one time and say, hey, listen, I know you're a busy guy. You can find out all about my drugs either online or reading an article someplace.
Yep.
I visit 30 medical offices a month, 40 medical offices a month. And every month I'm going to pick the number one thing that I find in those offices that can help you build your practice, whether it's fixing a waiting room or how people are greeted. And all I ask is that when I come by, you give me 2 minutes of time so I can share that best practice with you, and then I'm on my way. Fair enough?
Fair enough.
Okay, so you shared a little bit about change the measurement, be totally customer focused, finding something of value for, you know, your next visit. Talk to us about your management style and philosophy.
You know, my management style is all about attitude and mindset. It's about ownership and accountability, and it's about skill development. You have to perform and you have to get results. I'm about growing people and growing business. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. You've seen one doctor. So, you know, give me your best at every situation, the win-win. I would like to, if you wouldn't mind, to tell you a story. When I was a junior Olympic coach, and we had to select a team to go to, and this was before AAU and all the big recruiting battles and stuff you've seen going on with major universities today. This was a true junior Olympic team of 16 and 17 year olds. We went to Brussels, Belgium to play in a 16 country tournament. And so to select the team, we had over 100 participants. And the best thing that I did was hire two highly experienced assistants who then told me that we're going to evaluate this talent, but that's not your job. Your job is to get the best team, put the right people in the right spots. And so we did that and we went to Belgium. I didn't know that they had a girls' tournament going on at the same time there. And I had like 100 rules about what they needed to do. And what I learned there is that, well, first and foremost, they couldn't keep up with all those rules.
Yeah, that's a lot of rules.
Yeah,
it's not fast, but like 100.
Yeah. If a girl showed up, all the rules would go out the window.
Exactly, Jeffrey and Jim, because the thing was, here's what I learned. We beat Israel. We beat Greece. And we lost to Belgium. Now, picture Belgium just for a moment. Their team had hair down to their waist. They were full tattooed. They had piercings. And they were drinking beer on the bench and smoking cigarettes. And at halftime, we were down by 10 points. And I asked my assistants what we should do. And he said, I'm trying to find the brand of cigarettes they smoke. And get a we actually lost. And realized that, you know, these guys were overwhelmed with this. And I said, okay, three rules. Be at practice on time, be at game on time, and give me your best. And I don't want to know the other parts. So once we got those rules set, we came back with a gold medal. That philosophy has stuck with me, that I had, who was my customer? Those players. I had to put them in the right spots, the right positions with the right things, and then inspire them to perform. but they wanted to have fun.
Right.
All right. So to get that gold medal, your team was training their asses off, I would assume. Yeah. And, but what do you say to someone who says, Mark, sales is a feel kind of thing. It's not something you can learn. It's not something you can train for. You're either born with it, you either got it or you don't.
I'd say bullshit, because that's not, there is nothing true to that, because, you know, there are factors that, you know, you have to look at when you recruit somebody in to be on your sales team, you know, motivational fit and initiative and work ethic and all that. It's hard to teach that. But if I have somebody that's willing and able, I'm going to coach them. Mm-hmm. If I have somebody that's willing and not able, I'm going to train them. If I have somebody not willing but able, I'm going to direct them. And if they're not willing and not able, I'm going to counsel them out. And so, you know, there is a situation whereby if someone really doesn't have, and I know passion is overused many times, but doesn't have that enthusiasm, then, you know, it's probably a matter of time. You know, one other thing, where I grew up in Keeneland Racetrack, thoroughbreds and thoroughbred racing. I used to sneak up and get in between the hedges and watch those horses run with those jockeys. And I said, one day, and energetically, I'm going to be a jockey. I'm 6'4", 250. And so I eliminated myself at the age of 8, actually, from ever being a jockey. There's some things you're never going to be enthusiastic enough that you can do. So if you're not thinking you're going to be a salesperson, you're right. You're not.
But some people get in there because they want the money. Have you dealt with that kind of person?
Many times. And it's fine. You know, I want the money as well. But, you know, there has to be a commitment of excellence. I have to be able to trust that you're giving me what you say you are. And you got to care. So.
Yeah, you have to have a belief system, correct?
Right.
How did you instill a belief system in people?
Yeah, I think I still do a lot of assessments, you know, either formally or informally. And I do look for their values and what their character is shaped by. Usually it's their story. Everybody has some conflict that they have overcome. And if I see a successful person, it's usually someone that has overcome adversity time and time and time again. And so it's that perseverance that I look for, and you know, bringing on those values that are so important. Because if I don't have their mind, I'm certainly not going to have if I don't have their heart, I won't have their mind.
So it's perseverance with an impressive ending.
Yes, exactly. You know,
making
Jeffrey,
that emotional connection.
Yeah.
Good deal.
Yeah.
You know how this happened that we're sitting
Let's
here?
Let's tell everyone.
Yeah.
I sent out a series of emails, persevering, and you happened to connect with me on LinkedIn. And I sent you a number of emails, two, as a matter of fact, and you wrote back and you said, the first one, I ignored it. The second one I looked at, the third one is going to get you an opportunity to be on the show.
Well, and I think
well, that's
in true Jeffrey style, I think he said something like, by the second email, I realized you weren't full of shit.
Right.
Yeah.
And well, that you were the real deal.
Yeah.
He did say, I looked at your website and you're pretty cool. So I am still...
I felt that you had a solid message, and I felt that you had a platform of credibility, and that's what it really takes to be on our show. We're trying to give our audience, the sell or die audience, as much value as they possibly can get. They're in their car, they're on a train, they're at home,
mm-hmm.
they're listening to an episode. They want to listen to people that are viable and valuable.
And who can bring new information or new strategies and something that's helpful.
So we took into account that you were from Kentucky and now live on the wrong coast of Florida. And in spite of that, we invited you on the show.
Well, while you're still here, can you talk to us about street level branding? I know you have this concept, and I want to make sure we talk about that.
I did a project for a large information technology company. And what I found was that these teams of business developers would go in and deliver the products. And these were products worth millions of dollars, $30 and $40 million contracts. And they would present their product just like the other 10 people had presented. And after the presentation, I would ask each of the people involved in the business development, the account specialist or the sales engineer or whomever, I said, what did you think about that? And they said, you know, I think we presented our company very well. And I said, okay, and what else? Well, I think our products are superb. Okay. And then what did you think the customer thought about it? And they didn't have a very good answer. And usually it came about the fact that they said, you know, I really didn't give them the reason why it was going to be important to them, or that they didn't understand that this traditional corporate branding didn't resonate with them. And so the street branding that I propose comes in the way of developing a story for the buyer. It doesn't take much research. I mean, through social media today and even, you know, on the web, to be able to understand who you're dealing with, who you're meeting with. And you should have a lot of influencers that you're talking to and learning information. And I help them craft that story, because if it's not about them, if that customer or the suspect becomes the prospect, becomes the customer, and you're not letting them wear the cape, you're not letting them be the hero, you're losing. And we saw contracts that were being lost, and they used the street level branding messaging, and we were getting contracts from Walmart, Disney, Visa, Shell, Exxon, all those companies who saw the differentiating factor as, yeah, it's about us. We see the relevance.
I think that's something that every salesperson can take home, because they tend to give we presentations. We do this, we do that, we. And they have a we website and a we business card and we literature. And it just doesn't work like that. So I'm assuming that in your case, you cross out the word we and add the word you or there or, you know, you or something.
Yes, absolutely. And giving them, you mentioned earlier about traveling around and seeing what other clients do or other customers do, and bringing that insight back and saying, you know, these are the things that I'm here to help you with and help you avoid. I want to take away the objections before they start. I want to take away the challenges before you have to deal with them. Of course, you're going to have problems. We have that in common. Everybody has problems, but it's how we solve them. And it goes back to the trusted advisor and really being real about that understanding of how you become a trusted advisor.
But you can't do it in one visit. You have to become a trusted advisor over time, correct?
Correct.
And what do you have a methodology for establishing that?
Well, you know, I do. And that methodology involves in really getting down to the authenticity and understanding what's real and what's not. I mean, I find so many salespeople who want to tell me about all the great things they're doing and all the great things about their product and so forth. And that's all good. But my questions are in and around, how do you deal with it? Why do you deal with it? What it is? Because everybody talks about who and what they did and how they helped somebody else, but it really is about that one person. So the techniques all revolve around relationship building and getting them to open up about who they are and how they can be effective questioners and learning more about the customer and listening, which I know is not easy, but that is what it all comes down to. It's fundamentals and it's doing them every day, and it's compounding improvement so that relationship building is not just building rapport. It's actually building a relationship.
Do you need a certain level of intellect in order to be able to play the game?
That's a great question. Yes, I think you do. I think you have to comprehend. You have to gain. You have to be able to access and understand the knowledge. But you also you have to be able to apply.
Well, that was a lesson I wasn't expecting. That was pretty deep.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, and I think that if you're a sell or die hard, if you're a die hard listener, you might want to listen to that one twice, because there's a lot of information that was transferred that you can apply to you. However, as we said at the outset of this episode, it takes some self-discipline, and it takes a desire, and it takes a love of what you're doing and a belief in what you're doing to be able to make your way to accomplish what he has.
And one of the things he said was he wanted to be the best of the best.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Well, and he created these little things. If you go to his website, and you see, you know, go to Mark C. Green, PhD, from a URL perspective, just search for him in Google. He's in Florida. And you'll see that he's got the accelerated growth chart. He's got creating business value chart. I mean, this guy's got some depth to him, and I think you'd be tremendously benefited just from studying what he thinks and what he says. In the meantime, you want to talk about the contest anymore? You want to review that one more time?
Here's the deal. You can win an all-expense-paid trip to Charlotte to spend time with Jeffrey. You'll spend the day here, meet the team, get to see the studio, get a full backstage pass to Sell or Die, maybe even come on our show, get coached by Jeffrey. All you need to do is, I hope you've read his little gold book of Yes Attitude, because it's an amazing book. And all you have to do is talk about how that book and how Jeffrey's concepts in that book have impacted you. Record a video, post it to YouTube with the title, Jeffrey Gittimer Gave Me a Yes Attitude. And use hashtag Gittimer, hashtag Yes Attitude, and tag Jeffrey. The more times you post and share all over social media, the more chances you have to win.
And all you have to do to win is have read the Yes Attitude book, have it impacted you, and then just be able to clarify it for a minute or so on your iPhone or
Jeffrey, how did you get, how did you know you had a Yes Attitude?
A crazy story, but I lived in New Jersey where no one has a good attitude. And I took up with this guy, a bunch of guys, and we were selling network marketing stuff for the great Glenn Turner, Dare to Be Great. And we started to read Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich. And we read and did a book report on a chapter every morning. We had a 4-hour sales meeting, about 20 minutes of which was devoted to one chapter of Think and Grow Rich. Mm-hmm. Now think about it, 4 hours of a sales meeting every day.
Wow.
For 1 year. We read the book in its entirety about 10 times. And what we discovered was that the more you repeated it, the more you got out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I just realized I had it. I can't explain. I know where I was.
Yeah.
I was walking down the steps from our TV room downstairs into the basement in the home where the twins had just been born. And I go, I got it. I got it. And it's never left me.
That's cool. I think the first step when you're trying to seek a yes or a positive attitude is actually noticing it in others.
Yeah. You reach a point where you want to hang out with positive people.
Yeah.
You want to be impacted by or impact other people and have a discussion with them, because you know that they're not going to come back to you with a bunch of crap about, well, you can't do that.
Well, they look at things differently. They look at things with a positive slate, mm-hmm, rather than a negative
angle. Yeah, tell me what you can do, not what you can't
exactly,
do.
Exactly.
So if you're out there and you're thinking, hey, I cannot do this, I need you to rethink of it and take the word not out of there. That's number one. Number two, I want you to get into the contest. If you don't have the gold book of Yes Attitude and you feel like, oh, I can't do this, just download it on Kindle.
Yeah.
It's a $10 investment in yourself. Read the book. You'll be inspired.
Well, shoot the new video. Version's coming out.
Yeah, but it's, listen, you'll be fine. Just download it for 10 bucks. I want to thank you for being a diehard.
So, oh, yeah.
Yeah. So let me sign off by saying that I'm very grateful for our listeners. This has been a wonderful year for us. We're going to grow the hell out of this podcast because it's fun and people are responding very well. And if it's one of you, thank you very much. And if it's not one of you, start telling us. Subscribe to the podcast, get it on Overcast, get Overcast down on your iPhone and start to play the game.
We have a website now, sellordiepodcast.com. All the information, all the show notes, everything is there. It's so cool. Our team is working really hard behind the scenes to make sure that
and
all
some of
the
us
stuff
are,
is there.
Some Doug Branson is in front of the scenes trying to make sure that he keeps us on cue and does one hell of a job for which we're exceptionally grateful.
Yes.
I am Jeffrey Gittimer. I'm the author of The Little Red Book of Selling. And
I'm Jen Gluckow, founder of Sales in a New York Minute.
And I'm recommending that in this holiday season, you get out there and sell something, even if your ass falls off.